The deep dive starts now. We are tackling John chapter 10 today, but let's actually start with something maybe a bit unexpected. Voice recognition technology.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Like the security on your phone or smart speaker.
Exactly.
That thing, it's designed to listen only to the owner. If you tried yelling at my smart home device, you know, play Baby Shark or whatever.
Please don't.
Right. It should just ignore you because your voice, your cadence, it doesn't match the owner's profile. It doesn't recognize you.
And that idea that recognition proves ownership, proves belonging, that's the perfect lens for our deep dive today. We're digging into John chapter 10, this powerful shepherd metaphor Jesus uses.
Right. He uses it to draw this really sharp contrast between true leadership, his leadership, and the, well, the abusive false authority of the religious leaders he was confronting.
So our mission, really, is to unpack this core discourse where Jesus declares himself the Good Shepherd. It's one of those huge I am statements in John.
One of the seven, yeah. And it's crucial to remember, these aren't just like job descriptions. They're claims of divine identity. Deep stuff.
And the setting, the context, it's so important here. We're not in a vacuum. This is still happening during the Feast of Booths or Tabernacles.
Which carries huge symbolic weight, right? That feast involved ceremonies with light and water, pointing to God's presence, his provision. Themes Jesus had already picked up and applied to himself in earlier chapters.
Definitely. And the immediate lead up, even more charged. John 9, just before this, Jesus heals the man born blind.
Mm-hmm. And this wasn't just, you know, a quiet miracle. It was public. Undeniable, a direct challenge to the Pharisees' whole system and authority.
And how did they respond?
Well, exactly as you might expect from threatened leaders. Total rejection. They interrogated the man, hassled his parents, and then ultimately threw him out, excommunicated him from the synagogue.
Cut him off completely, socially, religiously.
Yeah, they basically destroyed his life as he knew it, which, you know, makes them look like terrible shepherds abusing the flock, casting sheep out.
And that sets the stage perfectly for chapter 10. Jesus, the true shepherd, finds this outcast man, reveals himself.
I am the Son of Man.
And then launches into this metaphor, painting the Pharisees as these thieves and robbers who just don't care about the sheep.
So that really frames our core idea today. Jesus is the good shepherd. He calls, he leads, he protects, and ultimately he lays down his life. All so the sheep can have this abundant life.
Okay, let's start where Jesus starts. The sheepfold itself. Describe that for us.
Right. So you need to picture something communal, not a private little barn for one guy. This was usually a larger enclosure, maybe stone walls, often right in or near the village.
Shared space.
Exactly.
Yep.
Multiple shepherds might bring their flocks there for the night, and there'd be one gatekeeper, sort of a watchman, responsible for the night.
Got it. So the first big contrast Jesus makes is about how you get in.
Yeah. The thief, the robber, he avoids the proper entrance. He climbs over the wall, sneaks in some other way. Why?
Because his intentions are bad. Steal, harm, abuse.
Precisely. He only cares about what he can get from the sheep, not about the sheep themselves.
But the real shepherd.
He walks right up to the door. The gatekeeper knows him, recognizes his face, his routine, and probably his voice too. Lets him straight in. It's legitimate access.
Which brings us right back to that idea of recognition. Now, the sources point out sheep aren't exactly geniuses.
Uh-huh. No, not known for their critical thinking skills. They panic easily. They wander. They have basically zero defense mechanisms.
So the power of the metaphor is that their survival hinges on this one thing, recognizing the unique, specific call of their shepherd.
Yeah. A stranger could try to mimic the call, but the sheep, they won't respond. They're tuned to that one frequency, that one voice they trust.
That implies such a deep dependency. They trust that sound implicitly.
It's everything to them. You know, there's that story, maybe apocryphal, maybe not, but it illustrates the point perfectly. The one about the judge in the courtroom.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that one. Two shepherds claiming the same flock.
Right. No paperwork, obviously. So the judge, cleverly, has the sheep brought into the courtyard. The first guy steps up, gives his call. Nothing. Sheep just mill around.
But then the real owner steps up.
Gives his unique call, and boom, the whole flock turns, moves towards him, follows him out. Ownership proven right there by voice recognition.
It shows Jesus wasn't just using some like quaint little story. He was tapping into a fundamental reality of their world.
Absolutely.
So, okay, let's bring it to us. If we're the sheep in this picture, how do we develop that recognition? How do we filter out the noise and know the voice?
Well, the texts seem to point to consistency. First, it takes time spent listening. you know, intentional time in the shepherd's word, understanding his character, his promises.
You can't recognize a voice you rarely hear.
Exactly. If the shepherd's language, his way of thinking, is foreign to you, how can you possibly pick it out?
And the second part seems to build on that, developing discernment, being able to tell the difference between all the internal voices we hear.
Mm-hmm. That's key. Once you're familiar with a shepherd's character, you start to notice the dissonance, like that urge to maybe cut corners on a project, get ahead, versus that other prompting, maybe to stop and help someone with car trouble, even if it makes you late.
One sounds like self-interest, maybe even theft of time or integrity.
Well, the other aligns with the shepherd's nature, kindness, sacrifice, generosity. The true shepherd, Jesus says, calls his own sheep by name. It's personal.
Mm.
And he leads them out.
Okay, so Jesus lays out the sheepfold analogy, but maybe the crowd wasn't quite getting it because he then shifts, he restates it, but even more directly.
Yeah, he doubles down with another I am statement right here in the same passage.
I am the door of the sheep.
Yes, and this isn't just repeating the first point. It adds another layer.
What's the significance of being the door specifically?
Well, think about that sheepfold again. Sometimes, especially in a more rustic setup, the shepherd himself or the gatekeeper would literally lie down in the opening at night. He was the door, the physical barrier against threats.
Wow. So Jesus saying, I am the door, means he is the only legitimate way in or out.
Exactly. He's the access point. He's the protection. Anyone entering by him, he says, finds salvation, security. They can go in and out and find pasture. There's freedom and provision, but only through him.
It establishes his exclusive authority over the flock's well-being. He controls who comes in, who goes out, their safety, their food, everything.
Right. And that really sharpens the contrast with those he calls thieves and robbers. He says, all who came before me in that spirit were like that, trying to access the sheep illegitimately for their own gain.
Unauthorized access, destructive motives.
But then he adds that hopeful note. The sheep did not listen to them, suggesting that deep down there's an instinct in the true sheep to resist false shepherds.
And this leads to another two difference, doesn't it? How they manage the sheep, leading versus driving.
Oh, this is huge. The good shepherd leads from the front. He goes ahead.
Why is that important?
Think about it from the sheep's perspective. They follow because they trust him. If there's danger up ahead, a predator hiding, a tricky path, a cliff, who sees it first?
The shepherd does.
Right. He encounters the threat first. His presence leading them provides confidence. They're moving towards safety, towards the one they trust.
Okay, so what's the alternative, the bad way?
Driving the sheep, usually from behind. Often using things that provoke fear, dogs nipping at their heels, loud noises, maybe even physical force.
So that's about making them run away from something scary, not follow someone trusted.
Exactly. It's management by fear, manipulation, control. Not relationship, not trust. It's forcing movement through anxiety.
So if you feel like you're constantly being driven by fear, maybe scrambling away from threats, that's not the shepherd's way.
No. The shepherd's call is to follow him even into uncertain places, trusting that he's gone ahead, that he knows the way, that he is the way. It requires overcoming that natural panic instinct and trusting the voice.
Okay, this next part really crystallizes the whole thing. Jesus explicitly contrasts the mission, the ultimate goal of the thief versus his own mission.
Yeah, this is the heart of it. Stark contrast. The thief, he says, comes only to steal and kill and destroy, period.
That's incredibly blunt. Steal, kill, destroy.
No ambiguity there. But then he contrasts it with his own purpose. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly.
Let's dig into steal, kill, destroy. How did the Pharisees exemplify that with the man born blind in John 9?
Well, think about what they did. They stole his social standing, his place in the community. They effectively killed his reputation by declaring him a sinner unworthy of the synagogue. They destroyed his access to communal worship and belonging.
Acting purely out of self-preservation, protecting their own power.
Exactly. They prioritized their status over the well-being of the sheep entrusted to them. Classic thief behavior.
And the sources suggest this isn't just about, you know, ancient religious leaders. This principle applies more broadly.
Mm-hmm. The argument is that anything we follow apart from the true shepherd ultimately leads down that path. Steals, kills, destroys. Think about modern thieves.
Like, what are some examples?
Well, maybe the pursuit of just a comfortable life above all else. Or maybe materialism, consumerism. The idea that more stuff will bring happiness.
How does that steal
It steals your resources, obviously money, time spent working for things you don't need. It steals your focus, your energy. It steals joy, often, because it promises fulfillment. It can't deliver it. You're trying to fill a God-shaped hole with stuff.
Okay. And how does it kill?
It can kill your spiritual life.
Right.
The time and energy poured into acquiring and maintaining things is time not spent connecting with God, with others, with your own soul. It kills that deeper vitality.
And destroys.
Leads to debt, stress, anxiety, maybe even broken relationships. Ooh. That constant pressure. Think about how many people feel perpetually busy, stressed out, unfulfilled, even when they have a lot materially. It's destructive. It's the opposite of the peace the shepherd offers.
Right. So contrast that with abundant life. What does Jesus mean by that? It's not just like a bigger house and a nicer car, is it?
Definitely not. The Greek word here for life is zoe. It's often contrasted with bios, which is just our physical, biological lifespan.
So zoe is more.
It's spiritual life, eternal life, not just in duration, but in quality. It's a depth, a richness, a connection to God that transcends circumstances.
A different kind of existence altogether.
Exactly. It's a life defined by trust, peace, resilience, knowing you're cared for by the shepherd, even when things are tough. It's a life that that has meaning now and continues infinitely. It's true life, full life, regardless of your bank account or zip code.
That trust is vital, isn't it? Because the final, most profound difference between just a hired worker and the actual shepherd comes down to sacrifice.
Yes. This is the ultimate test. What happens when the wolf comes? When real danger threatens the flock?
The hired hand.
He's just there for the paycheck. He doesn't own the sheep. He has no deep vested interest in them. So when he sees the wolf, what does he do?
He runs, abandons them, saves himself.
Exactly. Leaves the gate open, sheep scattered, vulnerable, helpless. Because fundamentally, he cares more about himself than the sheep.
But the good shepherd.
Because he owns them. Because he loves them. He stands his ground. More than that, he lays down his life for the sheep.
He willingly sacrifices himself, takes the hit.
Yes. In the ultimate sense, he takes the penalty for their sin, absorbs the wrath, protects them by giving himself. It's the absolute opposite of the hired hand's self-preservation. It's leadership through ultimate sacrifice.
And Jesus makes a crucial point about how he does this. It's not forced on him.
Right. This is a massive theological claim here. He says, no one takes it my life from me, but I lay it down of my own accord.
He's claiming total authority, total sovereignty, even in his death.
I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This isn't victimhood. It's a chosen authoritative act, perfectly aligned with the Father's will. He connects it directly. I know my own and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father.
That's divine intimacy and divine authority wrapped together.
Absolutely. And then he broadens the scope dramatically.
Right at the end of the section, he mentions other sheep.
Other sheep that are not of this fold. It's a clear signal that his mission, his flock, extends far beyond the Jewish listeners right in front of him.
He's talking about the Gentiles, the non-Jewish world.
Almost certainly. He envisions a future where these other sheep will also hear his voice, and there will eventually be one flock and one shepherd.
Taking that small communal sheepfold idea and making it global, universal.
Yeah, it directly counters the Pharisees' narrow, exclusionary view, the very view that led them to cast out the healed blind man. Jesus is basically saying, my flock is much, much bigger than your little synagogue.
Okay, so let's try to pull this all together. What's the takeaway? Following the true shepherd means recognizing his voice through familiarity.
Trusting his leadership even when it's hard.
Receiving that zoe, that abundant, eternal life he offers.
And understanding the depth of his sacrifice, that he willingly laid down his life out of love and authority.
And yet, despite the clarity of this metaphor, which, as you said, would have been obvious to anyone in that culture.
Plain as day.
The reaction was division. Intense division.
Yeah, the text says many of the leaders immediately dismiss him. He has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him? Just outright rejection.
But not everyone.
No. Others push back. They use the evidence right in front of them, the very thing that sparked this whole discourse. Their counter was simple. These are not the words of one who has a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?
They pointed to the fruit, the outcome, the life-giving power.
Exactly. The evidence forced a choice. His words, combined with his actions, demanded a verdict.
And maybe that leaves us with the final question to wrestle with. When you're faced with competing voices, competing claims on your life, what evidence do you use? How do you discern the shepherd's voice, the voice of life and restoration, from the robber's voice, the voice of stealing, killing, and destroying? What's your test?